A leadership that is looking to develop the nation and take it in a certain direction is key. If most African countries had a quarter of what Rwanda has, I believe that Africa would be a very different continent.
My focus generally right now is to project Africa as a destination for Africans to travel within and to basically spend more of our tourism dollars within the continent.
But the only way that's going to happen is if people see that there are places that are worth going. If they're attracted by the visuals that we can produce, then that's what's going to make that happen. And so this is why I do what I do.
Hello, Africa. You're listening to 1000 African Voices. I'm your host, Aburengwi C, coming to you from our Johannesburg studios. 1000 African Voices is a program that profiles Africans of diverse cultures who have traveled and lived across the African continent and the world. In this series, we will collect and share stories from all parts of Africa. Welcome.
1000 African Voices.
Hello, Africa, and welcome to yet another episode of 1000 African Voices. I'm your host, Aburengwi C, and today we're joined by Steve Ababio from Ghana, who will shortly introduce himself to the listeners of 1000 African Voices. Hello, Steve.
Hello, Aburengwi. This is Steve Ababio. I am speaking from Accra, Ghana. I am a professional photographer and filmmaker. My focus generally right now is to project Africa as a destination for Africans to travel within and to basically spend more of our tourism dollars within the continent as opposed to traveling outside to Europe and the Americas and spending our money there, in a nutshell.
I really like that, trying to get Africans to travel and traverse their own continent, which is really what we're trying to do on this show, where we try and connect Africans from all parts of Africa. So it sounds like, Steve, as a photographer and a filmmaker, you really are doing what we're doing on the audio side. Why did you choose to do that? And why are you passionate about photography, filmmaking, and getting Africans to travel and understand their own continent?
Well, I would say from a professional standpoint, I've always been a visual kind of person. My professional life started out as a graphic designer and a marketing person for a printing press. So I have always been working on the visual side of things. I moved from there into television. From that point also, I moved into new media and web development and the production of websites for corporate clients. So my focus has always been on how do you project things visually? How do you help people to make that visual connection with what you're interested in? And so moving from that point to into professional photography was a very easy transition. And as I worked in Ghana and across Africa and then the US and Europe as a professional photographer, I realized more and more that Africa is such a rich continent. We have so much, but it is actually enjoyed far more by people who are not originally from the African continent. We indigenous Africans tend to, the minute we have the means, the minute we have the access, to go outside the continent and go spend our money there, or to go outside the continent to go look for work and so on and so forth. So for me, it just made sense that, look, if we spend time traveling and spend our money on the continent,
not just opens our own eyes, but it also is an economic enabler for those who are so deprived in terms of where they live, because so many of the tourism attractions in Africa are based in places where people are extremely poor. So I felt that if Africans spend more of their money on the continent, we're actually doing a lot of the work that many of our governments are not doing, because we will go there, we will find investment opportunities, we'll spend our money, people will be better off, and so on and so forth. But the only way that's going to happen is if people see that there are places that are worth going. If they're attracted by the visuals that we can produce, then that's what's going to make that happen. And so this is why I do what I do.
And at what age, Steve, did you get into photography? At what point did it click in your mind that that was something you wanted to do?
Okay. So my father, he was a preacher. He was an evangelist. He was someone who got invitations to travel all over the world to preach the word of God. But in addition to being a preacher, he was a gadget person. I mean, he loved his cameras. He loved technology and stuff like that. So he had a really good camera. And every time he would travel, he would come back with photographs and pictures of places that he'd been, people that he'd met, things that he had seen. So even though we didn't travel with him, we always had a sense of having been there because we could relate from the photos that he would bring back. So from a very early age, I was really, really enthralled with photography. I basically became a hobbyist from my teenage years. I had a little point and shoot camera that I would use to take pictures. And then when I got to university, slightly better camera and so on and so forth. So it's been something that's developed over time. Now, I moved from Ghana to the U.S. I migrated to the U.S. at the end of the 90s. And the company that I worked with did a lot of web development and web consulting for other clients. Now, during that course, I realized that I was taking better pictures than the clients were bringing. My company was happy with that. So I decided that, you know what, let me pursue this and see how it works out. So I took a New York Institute of Photography. I began to practice more. And after a while, I just decided that this is something I really love. So let me focus and develop the craft. So that's how that started.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you a question since the advent of phones that can easily take photographs, I've always been fascinated to understand how professional photographers view the fact that I can take out my phone and take a picture. You spoke earlier about a point and shoot camera, which tells me that you are able to differentiate an amateur picture taken on a phone versus the kind of picture that you would take. Most people think taking a photograph is a matter of luck and taking as many pictures as you can. From a professional perspective, what is the difference? And it's really for my own understanding. What is the difference between a picture that I will take using my phone versus a professionally taken picture?
Okay, so for me, from a professional perspective, there is a difference between a picture taker and a picture maker. Now, as a picture taker, you basically pick up your phone and you point it at whatever you want and you click a button and you get a certain, you know, image on your phone. For me, I have envisaged in my mind how I want it, what my positioning is going to be, what I want the lighting to be, what I want the composition to be. All of these things go into actually making a picture versus taking a picture. It's a very different process. So once it's done, if you show me what you have on your phone, and if I show you what I took or what I made with my camera, you will see a very clear, very distinct difference in terms of composition, in terms of quality, in terms of lighting, and so on and so forth.
Okay. We're going to come back to the issue of photography, but I think sort of we owe our listeners an in-depth look at your history or background. If you don't mind just taking us through your past. I know you are in Accra now, but where did you grow up?
Yes.
And if you can also just take us through your school days. Where did you grow up? Where did you go to school? And what are some of the things that you remember from those days?
I was born in Accra. At the time that I was born in Accra, my father was in college. He had finished his university in Ghana, but he had gone to seminary school in Australia. So even though I was born in Accra, my mother traveled with me to Australia. So for my early years, first 3-4 years of my life were spent in Melbourne, Australia. After that, my father finished his course. He moved to Papua New Mount Hagen. And so then we moved from Australia to Mount Hagen. So I grew up in Melbourne, spent some years in Mount Hagen in Papua New Guinea. And then after that, we moved back to Ghana. So I spent a few years, maybe 3 years in Kumasi. And then we moved from Kumasi in Ghana to Accra in Ghana, where more of my primary school years. And then my school years were also in Accra. And then my university years were in Kumasi again. So it's kind of been a little bit of a back and forth.
I'm always fascinated by people who, at a young age, travel to different parts of the world. In your case, Australasia, studied in the States, went back to Ghana. What I've always wondered is, as humans, why we always go back more often than not to the places where we were raised. I don't know if you have any theories on that, like why did you choose to go back to Ghana where you could have chosen to stay in the States after your studies? Why the need to go back to Accra?
Well, I guess here's the thing. I grew up in different countries of the world, and most of my education in Ghana, primary school in Ghana, secondary school in Ghana, university degree in Ghana. And then I actually worked. I worked for quite a number of years, in Ghana before I moved to the States. So, in fact, the only reason I moved to the States was because the love of my life was living and working in America. So I felt that in order to do it the way I wanted to, I needed to make that move. However, I also felt that living in America would give me a certain education, a certain exposure to certain things. But whatever I learned from there, being an African in nature, I felt that if I was supposed to be an American, I assumed that I would have been born an American. I would have come, as an American, but I wasn't. I am an African. So whatever I learned from there be of benefit to where I come from, which is Africa. So in the back of my mind, even the whole time I was there, I knew that it's a permanent transition. This is a temporary situation. So when the time came and I felt it was time to move back, I asked my wife, honey, this is what I think. I want to move back. What do you think? She said, sure, whenever you're ready, let's do it. So when we were ready, it was a very simple transition to make.
And I'm sure you have not regretted going back to the continent of your birth. As we always say on the show, that Africa needs people not only within the continent, but people in the diaspora to be in the continent and make the best of what we have. Because I really truly believe that we do have the best continent anywhere in the world. So I'm really glad that you returned to not only Accra, Ghana, but also to Africa. Steve, let's then maybe talk about the career that you have developed for yourself, whether it's through photography or film productions. What would you say have been some of the challenges that you have experienced in building up the career that you have now? If you don't mind just revisiting some of the challenges and on the flip side of that, some of the successes that you have enjoyed.
So doing what I do, especially for me, where my focus is primarily tourism side of things, the biggest challenge is in Africa is political. The political establishments, at least in the part of Africa where I'm from, I believe not particularly concerned about developmental progress. Unfortunately, the way I see things and my experience has been that our politicians are more interested in looking for ways to enrich themselves, as opposed to looking for ways to develop the countries through tourism and other means that are available and possible to them. Those have been big, big challenges, because you would assume that doing what I do, you would get some support or some kind of assistance and some kind of facilitation from the powers that be. But that doesn't happen at all. On the flip side, on the successes side, I came into this career knowing these were the problems that exist. And I also came with a certain mindset that, look, I cannot allow what I want to do to be controlled by people who have no clue about what they want, making money. So I am here to make a difference as far as developing tourism in Africa is concerned. I know that there are hurdles, but I have every intention to attack them and to overcome them and to do the best possible job that I can do. For me, it's about leaving a legacy that lives on after me. And so that drives me to look at problems that as basically things that can be solved and move beyond. If the political circumstances change, great. But if they don't, I will still do what I do and do it to the best of my ability. So I think that, I mean, based on what I've seen so far and where I came from, where I began from, and where I am now, I believe that I've made good progress, and that progress can be seen at least online on my Facebook page, stevealbabio.5. If you go to YouTube and look up the Destination Africa Project on Facebook, Destination Africa Project, that's there as well. We haven't gotten to where we want to get to, but I believe that we're making good progress.
And I don't know if you keep count of the countries that you visit across the continent. I'm wondering, of all the countries that you've been to, if you have found any personal favorites or some things that you have seen that you will want to share with our listeners.
Absolutely. Anybody who follows my work will find that I've done a lot of work in Sao Tome and Principe, which is a little island nation. Well, there's two islands. There's an island nation, Atlantic Ocean, basically down below Nigeria and to the left of Gabon. We've done a lot of work there. It's one of my favorite places. It's a very peaceful country, beautiful, beautiful place with lots of amazing beaches, fantastic food. We've done a lot of work also in Ghana. Hopefully this year we're looking to do some work in Namibia, possibly Sierra Leone and Rwanda as well. But so far, in terms of what I have actually done, I would say that Sao Tome and Principe has been my favorite to this point.
All right. And your interest in Rwanda, and I'm asking probably from a selfish perspective, I'm quite keen to understand how Africans view a country like Rwanda, given where it comes from, as well as where they as a country are right now in 2019. What's your interest in Rwanda? Why is it on your list?
Rwanda is pretty much at the top of my list. For me, it's important for a number of reasons. I guess the first reason why I really like Rwanda and the reason why it's on the top of my list is that Rwanda epitomizes the kind of leadership I believe that African nations need. Rwanda is the ideal example of how leadership should lead, you know, because I believe that strong leadership, leadership with a vision, leadership that knows where they're taking the country, leadership that is focused not on corruption, not on personal gain, but leadership that is looking to develop the nation and take it in a certain direction is key. If most African countries had a quarter of what Rwanda has, I believe that Africa would be a very different continent. And I am interested to actually go there to capture the essence of that and bring it back home, and also to show across the continent to say that, look, where we are is not where we have to be. It is possible to do better. It is possible to come from the ashes. It is possible to rise up, and it is possible to overcome every odd that we have faced as a people and be who we really want to be. And for me, that Rwanda epitomizes that perfectly.
No, I totally agree. Recently, I have visited the Middle East, And on three different occasions, I met the locals of the place that I was visiting, and all three thought I was coming from Rwanda. And I found that fascinating because probably 10, 15 years ago, no one would have associated much with Rwanda except one narrative of the story. So now to go around the world and be recognized or be mistaken as being Rwandan, it tells you so much about the progress that they have made. Whether are you watching Arsenal Football Club playing with Rwanda on their strap, or just watching Rwanda, the international, their aircrafts, Rwanda Air, it's really amazing what they've done. And I totally agree with you.
Yeah.
If African countries had a quota of what they have, will be a very different continent. But it also serves just to show what we can do with good leadership. So I'm so glad you touched on that.
Absolutely.
The one thing that I've thought about with President Kagame is, for most African leaders that have been in power for 30, 40 years, when they started, and I'm thinking of President Robert Mugabe, they were amazing leaders. But over time, because they overstayed their welcome, they then became something else. So I've wondered with Rwanda, at what point President Kagame will have to consider probably grooming someone else, because he's really proven himself to be a good leader. But at what point does he then step aside? Because the work that he's doing is great. So I fear whether the successor will do just as great. And I don't know. I'll be interested to hear how you think about that when it comes to leadership across the continent.
When it comes to leadership across the continent, I mean, at this point, I mean, I feel that Paul Kagame, I hope and I pray that he remains in good health and continues to lead for many years to come. But I also am pretty key, being the kind of leader that he is and being the kind of visionary that he is, I am pretty sure that he has a succession plan in place. I liken him to, for example, I'm a Christian and I'm a member of a church, and my bishop and my pastor is Bishop Dag Heward Mills. He started the church from a certain point. At this point in time right now, even though he's still the founder and leader of the church, he is in a position where the church runs pretty much without him. So, but know that the church is running without him. Everybody thinks that he's still the leader. So I would assume, suspect that Paul Kagame has a similar system in place, where, because he travels a lot and he goes around the world a lot and has a lot of international commitments and stuff, but the country still runs. So I'm going to assume that he probably has a succession plan in place. It's just not very public, but it's working behind the scenes, and it will become very evident if he's no longer, you know, on the scene. But these things, personally, I don't have a problem with it not being publicized and made so much of, because what's important is what is happening on the ground and what is the progress that's being made.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. As I'm talking to you, I'm going through some of your amazing pictures on your Instagram page. I think people can just go to Instagram.com and just type Steve Ababio, A-B-A-B-I-O. Some of these pictures are unbelievable. I mean, how long has it taken you to develop such a collection, whether it's the people, the animals, the beautiful natural landscapes across Africa? It really is a work of art. And I suppose it explains what you were saying earlier, explaining the difference between a picture taker and a picture maker. These images are unbelievable. How long have you been building this portfolio, Steve?
Well, like I said, I've been shooting professionally since the early 2000s. Instagram, funnily enough, I was, I was kind of resisting getting Instagram. So another photographer who insisted and convinced me. I think I eventually got onto Instagram in 2014, well after it had begun. So I'm a bit late to the game. But yes, I've been posting since then. I've made it a point. I don't like photographs that are doctored or overly or edited, or, you know, present something I think is not reality. So I try to post what I I mean, what I like, which is images that are natural, images that tell a story, images that show you what the reality is. And more or not, the reality is actually quite beautiful. So that's where my portfolio comes from.
Yeah, I really like that, that reality, more often than not, is more beautiful than what we would create using today's technology. And when you do that, it really robs a picture of so much of its essence. So I agree with you that taking a natural picture, it just shows who the people are, what nature looks like without any doctoring. So I totally agree. And when you're not taking photographs, what do you do? Or what else do you do? Do you have any hobbies or things that you do to take your mind off photography?
Oh, I love to read. I love to read. I am sort of politically active, so I kind of get myself into trouble on Facebook from time to time. Swimming, every chance I get when we travel, we'll do some snorkeling or some scuba diving or whatever else there is to do. So I'm a very active and energetic person, to put it that way.
Oh, scuba diving. Does it then mean that around Accra, there are a few sort of water-based sports or water-based facilities? And maybe you can use that answer to take us to
Unfortunately, Accra doesn't have much with regard to water sports and so on. If you want water sports in Ghana, normally you'd have to head to the western region, or you'd have to go east towards the Volta region and then do. You know, Ghana is basically, it's on the coast, it's on the west coast of Africa, and takes off from the Atlantic and stretches up north. And we are bordered on the north by Burkina Faso. We are bordered on the east by Togo, bordered on the west by La Côte d'Ivoire. And so when it comes to water sports, you would head towards the east where the Volta River. Now, the Volta River is the continuation, or there is the continuation of the Volta River, comes down from the Akosombo Dam. The Akosombo Dam is the point that creates the Volta Lake. The Volta Lake used to be the biggest man-made lake in the world. I think it's now been surpassed by another dam lake in China, but it used to be the biggest man-made lake in the world. The Akosombo Dam basically provides, I would say, I don't know, about 40 to 50% of Ghana's electricity. And so the Volta River flows down from the Akosombo Dam into the ocean. And where it meets the ocean, the estuary, is a very, very beautiful area. Lots of resorts, water sports, and so on.
Okay. And I mean, if I were to come to Ghana, Steve, I mean, what would be some of the places that you recommend I visit?
If you were to come to Ghana, I would say I would look at three main areas that I'd love to see you visit, or I'd love to take you to. One is on the coast, which is in the western region, and that would be in a town called Axim. Axim is, you know, about halfway between the city of Takoradi and the border with La Côte d'Ivoire. There's a little resort there called Lumoon Lodge. It's very small, it's a very small boutique hotel, but it's where it's positioned on a bay with a little island. Really, really lovely, lovely. There's so much there, and the views are fantastic. That's one. Now, the second would be a little more central. This is a place around near the Akosombo Dam, I would say. It's another resort that is called the Royal Senchi Hotel. It is sited right on the Volta River. It's another amazing place, and there's a lot you can do. When I talk about resorts and places to go, I'm more focused on what you, as opposed to, you know, just, you know, a structure or a place that you can visit. I'm more interested in the activities and the stuff that will occupy you. So the Royal Senchi would be another one that I would love for you to see. And then the third one that I would focus on would be up north, to the north of Ghana, in the northern region. We have a forest reserve called the Mole National Park. The Mole National Park is home to lots of animals. And within the Mole National Park, there's another little resort there called Zena Lodge. Now, Zena Lodge is Eco Lodge. It's built to take advantage of the natural setting of the place. It doesn't intrude, but is rather part. And Zainer Lodge is lovely. You can literally in the morning come out of your, and the rooms are actually tents. So you could step out of your tent and there'll be an elephant basically sitting on the tree beside your door. I mean, it's that in tune with nature. So for me, those are the three places that I would love for you to see if you visited Ghana.
Wow. Now, thank you for taking us across Ghana. And as you were talking, I was looking at some pictures of Lomone in particular. Really stands out. The location is amazing, given that the whole structure is surrounded by water. So it's such a beautiful place. So thank you for taking us across Ghana. And as we're about to wrap up, Steve, I don't know if there are things that you would like our listeners to know about, either yourself, the work that you do, or even Ghana as a whole. Are there things that you want our listeners to know?
Well, the things I would like for our listeners to know is, please take a look at what we do, especially on our YouTube page, because that's where most of our videos are hosted. Our YouTube page, if you search for the Destination Africa Project, our YouTube page will probably pull up on top. Subscribe and follow us and take a look at our videos. But more importantly, I would say that we should think about travel not as something that you do because you have excess money and nothing else to do, but travel is an opportunity to tune your mind and to understand how things work with people generally and how things work on the continent in particular. I believe that as Africans, when we travel within Africa, especially when we travel within our own countries, we encounter and we see opportunities to do business and opportunities to create employment for our own people. Aside from that, every time we travel within our own country and within our own continent, we spend money that goes to benefit the people that live in the areas where we travel. When we travel outside our continent, we take money that we earned in the continent and go and give it to people of other continents. So I think that we should look at it as an active thing that is helping to develop certain areas of our economy. And this, for me, tourism is one of the areas where we as the people can take charge and do far more than the politicians. So that for me is a big deal. And if I leave any legacy behind, I want it to be that people think differently about travel, what it does, and how it can be used to develop our countries and to develop our continent.
And we have had over 60 voices on this show. And most times when you talk about the different countries in Africa or traveling across Africa, it's always about seeing new places, eating different kinds of food. It's the first time that I'm listening to someone presenting a commercial reason for traveling across Africa, saying it's okay to take money from Nigeria into Ghana, or Ghana from Ghana into Rwanda, or from Kenya to South Africa, because we are circulating the money within our own economy and helping grow our continent, whether it's reinvesting in infrastructure, tourism in general, as opposed to taking, I mean, it's bad enough that we take our raw mineral resources from the continent to other places.
Exactly.
So now to take the money to those other places, that's even a worse scene. So I really appreciate that perspective. And hopefully after this episode, most of our listeners will view it in that sense, that it may be true that traveling across Africa at times can be more expensive than flying to Europe. It's true, but you then have to redefine what you mean by expensive, because if you're reinvesting in your own continent, is it really that expensive? So, Bia, Steve, thank you for sharing that perspective. And once again, from myself, Aburengwi C, on behalf of all our listeners, I truly appreciate your time and I wish you all the very best with your photography work, the film production, and just spreading the gospel on the beauty of traveling and traversing our beautiful continent. So thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Aburengwi.
Take care, Steve. We'll see you in Accra pretty soon. Thank you and take care.
All right.
1,000 African Voices.
You've been listening to 1,000 African Voices. Please join us next time as we bring you yet another African voice. 1,000 African Voices is produced by Aburengwi C. Sam Ganich is our sound engineer, with our head researcher Jones Maleka. The intro soundtrack for the show is by the legendary Salif Gator from his 1995 album Forlorn. The song you're listening to right now is by Chronix, and the title of the song is Legend. For more information, including the contact details of our guests, please visit us on our website www.1000africanvoices.com. You can also subscribe to our show on iTunes by searching for 1000 African Voices. We are also available on Stitcher. You can find us as well on Podbean. The only thing we ask of you is that you subscribe to our show by logging on to 1000africanvoices.com and click the subscribe button. That helps us grow. It helps us keep producing and bringing to you more African voices. Until next time, Kungana Africa, and take care.
Being an ordinary person doing what's right. Yesterday at the football game, a little girl asked me my name. She said, sir, I've seen you before, tell me who are you? I said, I am a legend that you never heard of before. Said, I am a lion, but you never heard me roar. I am a hero that nobody celebrates. But if one person remembers my name, that means on the ocean of fame, I'm an unknown sailor. I'm the percussionist playing with the whalers, the one with the shaker, the mover and shaker. My name wasn't on the front of the paper, but me not cater. Much more than the worker, the work is greater. Creation glorifies creator. So all deeds done are in the name of my maker. I am a legend that you probably never hear about. Words from the lion's mouth. I am a hero that nobody celebrates. But if one person remembers my name, give praise, that means I made a change. My life, ordinary person just like you. If you take a look inside, you see the great things that people do. We're out here changing lives day and night, day in, day out. BBC don't show it, CNN don't show it. He's out.